Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you're going to get anywhere else. I know there are a number of places you can go to. There are podcasts out there. You can go to the mass media outlets that are out there. You can turn on your TV. There's a lot of different takes on sports. We're going to give you something just a little bit different than anyone else. We're going to look at things just with a little bit different of an angle than you're going to find anywhere else. You got to check out the Daily Dose Sports a couple different ways. If you are an iPhone or an iPod user, go to iTunes. We have a page on iTunes that you can get it from there. You can subscribe to it there. If you are not an iTunes user, that's okay. I know that sometimes I don't always like iTunes and Apple and all the things that they give you. Go to Podcast Republic, and you can download the podcast and subscribe to the podcast right directly to your Droid device. That way you do not miss a single show. You know what? This is our 25th episode. This is our 25th episode. Who knew it would even last this long? We're not where we want to be yet, but I just want to thank all of you listeners for making that happen, because we're not exactly where we want to be yet. We still want to get bigger. We still want to get better. But 25 episodes, we're on the right track, and I like the direction that the things are going right now. Hey, a couple different ways you can contact me. You can find me on Twitter. Twitter handle is Daily Dose Sports. You can find me by the same name on Facebook. And you know, if you're just sitting there and you're like, why would I subscribe on Facebook? You know, on Facebook, I've got my friends, I've got my family. But sometimes you just kind of get sick of that feed that comes up on Facebook. You get sick of the same old stuff coming up on Facebook about your great aunt's third marriage and stuff like that. Subscribe to the Daily Dose. You can find us on there and at least give you something a little bit interesting. Links to articles, links to some polls. I'll throw out a couple just random thoughts here and there. Check us out on Facebook or on Twitter. The website itself, if you would like to go to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Again, that is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Articles, again, links to polls. We have the links to the podcast there. If you just want to listen to the podcast directly from the site, you can do that as well. If you would like to email me, and I got a couple emails this week, I'm going to talk about those here in just a few minutes, but you can email me directly. You can email the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to have your thoughts. Would love to have anything from you, even if it's just some feedback. We would prefer it to be, nicer as opposed to meaner. But, whatever you got, we're ready to take, whatever that you do have. We have a lot to get to this week. We've got NBA playoffs. The NFL seemingly is always in the news. We've got to talk a little bit of NFL. We're going to actually talk some NHL playoffs. I'll be honest, it's a little bit different of a show today. We've got some different things going. We're going to talk a little horse racing. Yes, I did say it. We've got some college basketball news we've got to get to. We've got some boxing. We've got just a few things that we're going to get to that we don't usually get to. And we have a very historic Daily Dose Top 5 today. Something that you do not want to miss, a little bit different than what we usually have. Got some breaking news coming out in the world of sports today. Of course, the NBA draft lottery was last night, and there was a little bit of movement. The Minnesota Timberwolves, they're the worst team in the league, had lost 66 games. They do retain the number one pick. We weren't sure. And then after that, we had some movement. Because the Sixers dropped, the Knicks dropped, and somehow, now, do you remember me saying this? I said this probably 3 months ago. Watch and be shocked and amazed when somehow the Los Angeles Lakers sneak through and get a top pick. Yeah, we never saw that one coming. The Lakers end up with the 2 pick, dropping the Sixers to 3 and the New York Knicks to 4. I know, I was shocked too. If only someone had predicted that coming. Yeah, we actually did, like about 3 months ago. We said, you know what? I just have a feeling the league is going to make sure that the Lakers get a good pick. So, Timberwolves, you've got a couple, choices. You can go with Karl Anthony Towns, the big man out of Kentucky. You can go with Jahlil Okafor, the big kid out of Duke. A couple different ways they can go. Here's the question. For the Lakers pick, whoever that might be, whether that's Towns, whether that's Okafor, whether they went outside the box and went D'Angelo Russell or somebody like that. Here's the thing that I want you to think about. Would you rather be with the Timberwolves and just get your spirit crushed every day as you continue to be awful and lose every game? Because this isn't the first time that Minnesota has picked at the top of the draft. It seems like they pick at the top of the draft like almost every year. So it's nothing new for them to be picking at the top, and it doesn't really signify any change. Or would you rather go to the Lakers and have your spirit and soul crushed by Kobe Bryant every single day in practice, as we know is want to happen. The Denver Nuggets, they were set in there at about the 7th pick. They were supposed to be right around 7, and amazingly, they didn't drop. We were just happy they didn't drop. We were like, 7? That's great. We got 7. That's just how awful this franchise is. We're just happy that it's not worse. That pretty much sums up the entire franchise. NFL owners on Tuesday voted 30-2 to approve a change in the rule governing extra points after touchdowns. The owners have considered a few different proposals, and basically what they came up with is the extra point kick from now on, instead of being snapped from the 2-yard line, drops back to the 15-yard line, making that like a 32-yard field goal basically for your extra point. Your 2-point conversion is still at the 2-yard line, and if you do go for 2, a defense could intercept, pick up a fumble, whatever it is, run it all the way back and get 2 points of their own. So that is the change that now has been put into place. The kick moves from the 2 to the 15, and the 2-point conversion will stay there, but defenses can now score. You know who looks really smart in this? Who looks really, really smart in this? Chip Kelly with Philadelphia Eagles looks pretty smart in this. And do you know why? Because let's say that you need to go for 2. Let's say you are struggling in the kicking game. Let's say any of those things happen. Because you could usually, let's say your kicker got hurt and you needed like your punter just to kind of nudge one through for an extra point, and you're not sure about doing that. Who does Chip Kelly have that just might be able to run one in from the 2-yard line? I don't know. It seems like that he might actually kind of look like a smart guy in all of this. He went and picked up the human battering ram in Tim Tebow, who could actually earn up spot on that roster, if nothing else, just for 2-point conversions. Keep an eye on that. And it looks like, I know you're going to be shocked when I tell you this. It looks like Aaron Hernandez has gotten himself in some more trouble. I know, you might have to sit down when you hear that news. But it seems that the former Patriot tight end now was involved in a prison fight on Monday at the correctional center he is in Shirley, Massachusetts. And according to CNN, they are saying that Hernandez agreed to be on lookout for one inmate who went into another prisoner's cell, and the two inmates fought, and it looks like it might have been gang-related. I guess so much for rehab for Mr. Hernandez. Just doesn't seem to be able to keep himself out of trouble. And don't forget, he still has to stand trial for shooting 2 men in 2012 after one of them caused him to spill his drink. He's a rough guy to be around. Hey, we're going to talk something a little bit today that we don't talk about very much. I'm going to be honest. We don't talk much in the way of extreme sports on the Daily Dose. I don't know why. Just extreme sports just don't really come into it. We talk about, you know, more of the major sporting events and you know, the big four and that kind of thing. But we got to talk a little bit about some extreme sports today. I don't know why we don't talk about it much. Maybe this is why we don't talk about it much. On Saturday, legendary extreme climber, line walker, and base jumper Dean Potter and a fellow jumper by the name of Graham Hunt jumped off a 1,000-foot cliff in Yosemite National Park out in California. You know, they do this base jumping thing where you put this suit on, and then when you jump and you spread out the suit, it kind of looks like you're Batman, and it kind of gives you this gliding thing, and they glide down, almost touching the ground, and they glide over the ground, they glide between rocks, they glide through rock formations, they do all this stuff. You've seen these things. You've seen them on TV. Allows these guys just to sort of fly. Here's the bad part, and I genuinely, I don't mean to make light of this, but Potter and Hunt did not make it. They've done this many, many times. They did not finish the trip. I guess they died doing what they love. I mean, there is something to be said for that. When you sit there and you look at your life, you say, I would hope in some form or fashion, I would die doing something I love when I do pass. But I do got to think about this just a little bit. Because I feel like whatever your belief is in any sort of afterlife, that when you arrive at said destination, that you're kind of gathered with maybe there's some people greeting you, whether that is, you know, your maker or, you know, the St. Peter's or the family that's been waiting for you, whatever it is. And you kind of show up and everybody's kind of doing the, hey, you know, you're here. It's good to see you again. What got you? I mean, what was it that got you? And you know, there's the typical, hit by a bus. Oh yeah. You know, there's a lot of people up here been hit by a bus. That happens a lot. You know, what got you? Liver disease got me. Oh man, we got a ton of people up here with liver disease. That's a tough one. What got you? What got you, Dean Potter? Well, I jumped off a 1,000-foot cliff. Okay, so drug abuse? Alcoholism? No. I was completely sober. I did that on purpose. Depression? Mental illness? No. I was at the height of my faculties. I absolutely knew what I was doing. You jumped off of this cliff on purpose? Well, I had a bat suit on. I had this bat suit on, and I felt like when I got to the bottom, I would fly. Uh-huh. Well, I guess there's that. I don't know. You might have some disappointed people when you get to where you're going. Just maybe that's why we don't talk much about extreme sports, because when you lose at extreme sports, you really, really lose. You know, we broke down Deflategate last week in the NFL, and we talked at length about the New England Patriots. We talked about Tom Brady. I told you to keep an eye on the appeal press, and I'm not going to break into Deflategate and go through all that again. We did that once. We did that last week. But I did tell you, keep an eye on the appeal process, because Brady and the Patriots have to be very, very careful with this appeal process and where it goes. Yesterday, Patriots owner Robert Kraft announced the Patriots will not appeal the NFL's discipline. They will not appeal the Tom Brady suspension, the removal of draft picks, and the fine of $1 million. This was after last week the Patriots released a rebuttal to the Wells report. And if you saw the rebuttal, and I'll be honest, I looked at the rebuttal and some of the things on the rebuttal, I said, well, that's a solid point. They used two different gauges. The balls were a little bit iffy. They said that maybe they didn't measure all of the Colts footballs, but I don't think they had the opportunity to measure all the Colts footballs. I think they just didn't realize, you know, what was going on at the time. So they made a couple of points. But then they completely embarrassed themselves when they tried to spin that the reason one of these ball boys was called the Deflator, he was nicknamed the Deflator, was because he had been trying to lose weight. Oh, we've all used that one before. I mean, we all say, hey, you know what? I'm just trying to deflate a few pounds this year. I mean, who hasn't made the New Year's resolution to do some deflation? You know what? This year, I've decided to eat a little healthier. I'm going to work out more. I need to deflate a few pounds. Stop trying to insult our intelligence. And let me tell you this. If you're on the side that you're like, no, that makes sense, here's what I want to see. I want to see Deflator. Like, I want to see he had a Deflator tattoo. I want to see his license plate, like, says DEFLTR or something like that. Show me some proof that he just, hey, Deflator, what's up? Like, he's walking into the bar. Hey, Deflator. Don't give me this garbage that it had to do with weight loss. That was one of the stupidest things. And you know, these are smart guys doing this. You know, these are guys with like law degrees and master's degrees. And they're, okay, what could we come up with? He was just trying to lose some weight. Stupidest thing I have ever heard in my entire life. Now, just because the Patriots dropped their appeal does not mean Brady has dropped his appeal. The Brady appeal is still on for right now. And we'll see where that goes. I've told you to keep an eye on this because I want to see how hard Brady pushes on this. I expected them, and I told you last week, I expected the Patriots and Brady to beat their chest and say, woe is us, and you guys are picking on us, and this is all just big bunch of jealousy, and you guys hate us. But then let's see what they really do. Do they really come after the NFL and say, hey, we've got the goods, we're going to come out and get after this? Or do they beat their chest and then say, okay, never mind? Because remember, if this were to go to some sort of a trial, oh, and I hope it does. If this were to go to some sort of a trial, that's when it's really going to get interesting. that's when things are really going to get interesting, because that's when we're going to see some guys say, okay, we're going to need your cell phone, Mr. Brady. We're going to need to crack that thing open like an otter cracking open a clam, because we want to see exactly what's in there. And you know what? You might not even find deflate stuff in there. I think you would. You might find something even better. You might find some other things we didn't even know about. We only know of two things that the Patriots have been caught cheating on. We know about Spygate. We know whatever this mess and fiasco was. What are the things we haven't found yet? Want to keep an eye on that. And let me say this for the record, because I've heard some people say, what difference does it make? Who cares if he serves a... If Tom Brady serves any suspension, I don't care if it's a half game, I don't care if it's one game, I don't care if it's all four games, it has to taint that legacy a little bit. Because there's always going to be a served a suspension for manipulating the rules and integrity of the game next to his name. That won't go away. That will be in Wikipedia forever and ever. And we can sit here and argue, who's the greatest quarterback of all time? Is it Montana? Is it this person? Is it Manning? Is it Brady? Well, I don't know, but I know that only one of them has that line next to his name. Now, if you're Brady, I think you have to fight this. If you didn't do it, you've got to fight this, because you have to clear your name completely. Unless you did it, and then, well, I guess you can pretend that you want to fight it, but we know that you don't really. Let's talk a little bit about horse racing. And yes, we're talking about horse racing, and I know, horse racing is a bizarre sport, and a sport that kind of stopped being popular back in, like, I don't know, the 30s or something. It's a strange sport. Are horses athletes? I don't know. I don't even know if they know what's going on. I know when we hear the trainers and the jockeys or whatever, they talk about, oh yeah, they're really excited for the big race. Are they? Are they really? Or are they just hoping for a sugar cube that day? I don't have any idea. And it's kind of weird the way that we strap these little people onto the backs of these horses and you know, slap the horse and make them ride around on. It's weird. But let's talk a little bit about this, because you're going to start hearing more about horse racing over the next 2-3 weeks. And the reason for that is because American Pharoah, who had already won the Kentucky Derby, won the Preakness in a downpour on Saturday. So that gives him 2 out of the 3 races needed to win the Triple Crown. Couldn't they? I don't know if you watched the Preakness. The Preakness was seriously, it was a downpour. It was running water down the track. And it was funny because they were showing the weather report and they're like, yeah, it looks like this is all going to break in about 5 minutes. And go. And you couldn't wait 5 minutes? You couldn't. This is kind of the biggest, you know, race going right now. And the races, it's not like, well, if we delay it, then it's just going to push us into the evening. It lasts like 90 seconds. You could have waited for 5 minutes. Kind of odd. But jockey Victor Espinoza, who whipped American Pharoah, whipped him, you know, with the whip 30 times in the Derby, only whipped him once on Saturday. Because the race wasn't even close. American Pharoah won by like 10 lengths. Wasn't close at all. So now, we have a chance, we could have our first Triple Crown winner at Belmont in 3 weeks. And we haven't had a Triple Crown winner since 1978 when Affirmed won it. But here's the problem. This happens like every year anymore. This happens every year. We get, oh, we're going to have a Triple Crown. We're going to have a Triple Crown. This could be the year. 2014, remember California Chrome? 2012, 2008, 2004, remember Smarty Jones? 2003, 2002, 1999, 1998, 1997. This happens every year. We get a horse that wins 2 of the 3. And here's the problem. Nobody runs in the Preakness. So this last week, when American Pharoah won at the Preakness, he was racing against like 7 horses. No one enters the Preakness. But at Belmont, everyone's going to enter at Belmont. You're going to have all the horses enter at Belmont. And here is the problem. The Derby, Kentucky Derby, is 1.25 miles. You know, one lap around, 1.25 miles. Not that long. Preakness is just a hair longer, 1.3 miles. And then the Belmont jumps all the way up to 1.5 miles. So about the time these horses are like, okay, I think I'm done. About finished. No, you still got like a straightaway to go. It's such a long race. And then what'll happen And I'm telling you now, listen now, remember when this comes to pass, what you'll hear is when it happens and like American Pharoah doesn't win and they talk about, yeah, you know what? He was just a little bit tired. He seemed like he was a little bit tired. He hasn't run for 3 weeks. What's he tired from? Was he at the club last night? What is that horse tired from? But that's what they'll end up saying. Speaking of sports that no one has watched since the 70s. And I know. I've actually heard from a few listeners, from a few people on Twitter and on email and stuff saying, is this like a boxing podcast lately? You've done a lot of boxing stuff. But this is like spring is kind of boxing season. So we're going to talk a little bit of boxing. I know no one follows it anymore except for me because I'm stupid. But keep this in mind. Settle down. It's more interesting than baseball. On Saturday, middleweight Gennady Golovkin had a technical knockout in the sixth round over Willie Monroe. And I watched Gennady Golovkin. I told you that he is the guy that I would like to see Floyd Mayweather fight. I know full well Floyd wants nothing to do with him. And I'll be honest, Golovkin looked a little bit rusty. He came out in the first two rounds, knocked Monroe down twice, and then it seemed like he kind of was playing with him. Like he was just keeping his hands down, took a couple of big punches, didn't even faze him, and then he kind of got it together. He said afterwards he was just giving everybody a show. He didn't want the fight to end early. He knocked him down twice early, and then he took a bunch of punches, and then he ended up just when he finally, you know, felt like he wanted to fight again, he got to work and knocked him out and knocked him down, and the ref stopped it. But in watching that fight, it just made it clear that nobody wants to fight this guy. Nobody wants to fight Gennady Golovkin. I mean, the champion, Miguel Cotto, is fighting Daniel Giel, I think, this coming week. And Golovkin already knocked Giel out in two rounds. So I don't know how that's any kind of a fight that Miguel Cotto wants, other than the fact it's anybody I can fight except for Golovkin. We are positive Floyd Mayweather wants nothing to do with Triple G. He doesn't want to get anywhere near that fight. Floyd would be afraid to death of that fight because Golovkin would be the type of fighter that we wanted to see Manny be. We wanted to see Manny attack, cut off the ring, get him against the ropes, go to work. Golovkin would do that and would hurt Floyd. I don't think that would be a very, very good fight for him. But we'll see if anyone gives Golovkin a fight. No one wants to fight this guy. Everyone's just ducking him and avoiding him and trying to get away from him. And in the meantime, I mean, he's just gaining in age, and it's tough because you feel bad for the guy. You wish someone would give him a fight. But the story of the night on Saturday night, on the undercard of this fight, was flyweight champion Roman Gonzalez, who fought for the first time, and he's a champion, but he fought for the first time on like a major card that we got to see him here in the United States. He knocked out Edgar Sosa in the second round. And if you haven't seen Roman Gonzalez, I would encourage you, if you see the replay of the Golovkin fight on one of the channels, check this guy out. This is the best fighter you've never heard of. Mark down his name. He goes by Chocolatito, and he trained with Nicaraguan champion and Nicaraguan great Alexis Arguello as a young person. This kid is amazing. For being flyweight and fighting at what, like 112 or whatever he is, he hits like a ton of bricks, and he is highly, highly accurate. Just a fighter, just throwing that out there. If you see this guy fighting, tune in. Gonna talk a little bit more sports. We don't talk about much. Going to talk a little bit about the NHL. The NHL is down to the final four. And once again, in the NHL, Canada, America's hat, is not invited. You know, we haven't had a Canadian Stanley Cup champion since 1993 when the Montreal Canadiens won it all. And you know, that does not sit well with a country that has over 50 words for denim. Just keep in mind, you know, we have the original six teams. You know, you've got the Bostons and the Philadelphias and the Detroits and all these original six teams. And they have got to just be sick looking at this, conference finals, saying we could conceivably end up with California and Florida in the finals. So if you're not sure what you're watching, and we're not going to stay on hockey very long, believe me, but if you're not sure what you're watching, if you turn on the NHL, so you're like, I'm not going to turn on the Stanley Cup playoffs, I see it's on, but I don't know enough about it. Let me just give you just a really quick rundown, because You might not be a hockey fan, but trust me on this. It's better than watching like the Diamondbacks versus the Brewers. You've got the Rangers versus the Lightning over on the Eastern side. That series is tied at 1-1. The Rangers, what they're going to do is they're going to try to shut it down defensively. It's not really the zone trap stuff that we're used to, but it's a lot of forechecking. It's a lot of trying to keep things out in front of them and keep your puck away from their goaltender. They do get great goaltending from Henrik Lundqvist, who was phenomenal in Game 7 in the last series. If you see the Rangers win, check the score, because it's probably 2-1. They win every single game 2-1, it seems like. On the other side, you've got the Lightning, and the Lightning want to skate. They want to get up and down. They're actually a pretty fun team to watch, but it's kind of interesting to watch the Rangers and Lightning with these clashing styles. One's trying to slow it down, one's trying to bottle things up, and one's trying to get up and down the ice. Their goalie, Ben Bishop, has been very good versus New York this year. That should be an interesting series to watch. Like I said, it is tied at 1-1. On the other side, you have the Anaheim Ducks and the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, the Ducks, when you look at them, they are just bigger and stronger and faster. They've got some good scoring. They've got a lot of punch to their offense. I mean, you've got Ryan Getzlaff, you've got Corey Perry, really, really good scorers. And you look at them and you're like, I don't know. They look to me like they could just be that team. You know, that team to beat. They look so much bigger and stronger, but you're facing the Blackhawks. And the problem with the Blackhawks is they just know how to win. And it seems like no matter what happens, the Blackhawks just find ways to win every single time. And so it's going to be an interesting series to watch because, you know, with the Blackhawks, it's not that you look at them and you say they're just overly talented. They just have guys that get how to win series, and that get how to win every single time they get on the ice. Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, the big question I think will be, can Corey Crawford hold up in goal? And that's going to be the interesting thing there to keep an eye on. That series is also tied at 1-1, and it's one to keep an eye on. Now, if you're not sure where to find the hockey playoffs, I know it's not easy. Best place to find it, I think, is like on the Game Show Network, on some nights, and then maybe the Travel Channel on other nights. I don't know. You'll figure it out. You'll find it. But just know that the Stanley Cup playoffs are out there. It really is. It is the most exciting postseason. The energy changes, and people are living and dying on every single shift. If you get a chance, I know you've heard me preach, hockey's exciting. You got to at least check it out at some point during this playoff run. Now, I realize it is not college basketball season, but college basketball has actually been in the news just a little bit for some new rules that have been proposed to the rule committee. These rules will go to the rule committee with the NCAA, and they will be voted on, I believe it's like June 25th, towards the end of June, and see if they can be approved for next season. And it sounds like the three big ones have at least a pretty good shot of being approved. First rule that was submitted, shot clock is going to be moved from 35 seconds to 30 seconds. Finally, men's college basketball is going to catch up to women's college basketball. Let's be honest. It should probably be like 28 seconds, maybe even 24 seconds. I realize it's not the NBA. I realize it doesn't have to be exactly what the NBA is, but at least it's not 35. I'm not going to complain. At least it's not 35. And you know, the biggest difference that this will cause when you look at games is right now with the 35-second clock, you'll see a team come down. They'll usually run like a secondary kind of offense, which is, if I don't have a fast break, I'll run kind of a secondary set that is very, very quick, looking for a quick look or a quick shot. If I don't get that quick look or quick shot, I'll pull it out and I'll run maybe a set, sometimes even two sets. Sometimes you'll just have somebody dribbling off the clock. This will eliminate a lot of that stuff. You'll come down, you'll go fast break, you'll go with a secondary break, and then you'll get right into your set, because at 30 seconds, much more time that you waste, you're going to be settling for bad shots. So it's not a huge change going from 35 to 30, but it will change that just a little bit. The second rule that has been proposed, and like I said, it sounds like these three have a pretty good chance of being approved. The second one that has been proposed is actually a little bit bigger, and it's more important. And you're not going to hear talk about it. You might not have even heard it. You might have even heard about the shot clock change. This one is bigger and better. It changes the timeout situation from 5 timeouts to just 4 timeouts. And you can't carry more than 3 timeouts to the second half. Now, that might not sound big. Here's the other part of it that makes it even more important. If a team timeout is called within 30 seconds of a television timeout, it just switches to the TV timeout and we combine the two. Now, if you don't understand what that means, and that's okay if you don't, let me explain it to you. Because again, here at the Daily Dose, I know that I have intelligent listeners, and so we want to make sure that everybody understands exactly what we're talking about. When you're playing in a game like that, especially in a college game, and I've done this a little bit at the high school level, when you're on TV, they come to you with the schedule and they say, okay, here's the deal. It's a 20-minute half. So when your television timeouts is going to be, you're going to have a television timeout at 16 minutes, at 12 minutes, at 8 minutes, and at 4 minutes. And if there's no stoppage, if you don't use your timeout, then at the next dead ball, closest to those time limits, we're going to just take a television timeout and you can go to your huddle and you can do whatever you want. Now, let's say there are 4 minutes and 15 seconds left on the clock and I burn my timeout. We go to timeout. I talk to my team. Of course, TV uses that time to put some ads up, and they're running some stuff. Then, under the previous rules, in 15 seconds later, the dead ball might hit. Boom! Right at 4 minutes. Boom! We're going to another TV timeout. Now, what this does for coaches and for teams, to be quite honest, from a coaching perspective, there are times during a TV timeout, I don't have anything to say to you. I mean, unless I really have a tweak or I really have a set I want to run or I really have a thought that I want to get to you, it's about 5 minutes of me sitting there and staring at my team or talking to my assistant coaches because I just got done having a timeout. I don't have anything else to say to you. And from a watching perspective, from the spectator, they're like, we just got done with a commercial. We're going right back to just as long of a commercial. And so it makes the game really, really choppy. And I've been involved in those games when you are on TV. It's kind of tough because you're sitting there going, I feel like our game is chopped up so much. This is going to eliminate some of that. I wish they would do this with the NBA. They needed to have some kind of a similar system with the NBA because I think this is the better rule, even better than the 35 to 30 shot clock. It will kind of keep, when you're watching a game, it keeps it from being chopped up so much. And again, from a player coach perspective, I'm not getting anything out of those TV timeouts. The only people that are getting anything out of those constant timeouts is the network. That's it. Because the players hate it, the fans hate it, the coaches hate it. There really is no beneficiary of it other than the networks that are milking up all that money. The last rule that college basketball has put in is they are talking about moving the restricted area where you can take a charge. Right now, it's at 3 feet outside the basket. They're talking about moving that one more foot out and making it at 4 feet outside the basket. And really, the only rule for that is hopefully eliminating some of those physical plays that are right underneath the basket. You've got kind of a block charge situation. You've got someone, you know, going full speed at the basket. If you move that arc out, it might keep that away from the basket and you don't have those big, big physical plays. But I do like some of these rules that college basketball has put in. It sounds like they're going to get approved. And like I said, the sneaky one, the one that isn't going to get the attention is that timeout change, not just moving, changing timeouts from 5 to 4, but it's also changing that TV timeout format because that makes for an ugly, ugly game. It's hard to watch it. Let's jump in to the NBA. We are also down to the conference finals in the NBA. And, you know, it has been an interesting NBA playoffs, really interesting NBA playoffs. A couple teams weren't quite sure were going to be here. There's a surprise team that made it. There's a surprise team that didn't. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how the series ended in the last round. And I want to talk a little bit about the teams that lost and are no longer in the playoffs, just briefly, before we look forward to what's coming. And we saw a glimpse of what was coming last night with Rockets and Warriors, and that was a phenomenal game. Should be a very, very interesting NBA playoffs coming up. You know, what can you say about Clippers and Rockets? Clippers pulled an all-time choke job in Game 6. And I told you last week that I thought that series was over. Clippers, all they had to do was finish off one game. So I'm watching that game, Game 6 against the Rockets. The Rockets have no life whatsoever. Clippers are up by 19 with like 2 minutes left in the third quarter. You're like, this game's over. And everybody, it's funny because now I'm listening to everybody and they're like, oh man, what a great job Kevin McHale did. I mean, the tweaks he did, the moves he made. I mean, he sat down James Harden during that stretch. Well, I guess we can judge on the final product. But didn't it kind of feel, if you're watching that game, didn't it kind of feel like Mikhail was like, this series is over. We might as well sit James because we're not getting anything out of him. He hadn't looked very good. Harden really wasn't doing anything. And so he sits him down, and that bench and that group of cast-offs that I've told you in the past that I kind of like what they do with Corey Brewer and Josh Smith. I mean, it's a group that you look at and you say, really? That's the group? And somehow they find a way to come all the way back in Los Angeles and beat the Clippers. And the Clippers, oh my goodness, we're going to talk about them in just a minute. The Warriors beat Memphis in six. Remember when Golden State was down 2-1? And it looked like we may have found some serious weaknesses to your game. You guys can't defend inside. Your threes aren't falling. It seems like you guys have issues. And we were kind of back to that. I don't think a jump shooting team is going to win, the finals. We kind of were starting to look at them that way. And then it seemed like the light kind of went on and Steve Kerr made just a couple of small tweaks and they figured some things out. And they decided, hey, you know what? We can't match up with you guys inside. We can't. We don't have a matchup for Mark Gasol. We don't have a matchup for your bigs inside. But you know what? You don't match up well with us either. And instead of looking at it as a negative and saying, I don't know what we're going to do, they just decided, well, you're going to have to try to find us too. We don't have to play big. We're going to play whoever we play, and you're going to have to match up with us too. And we saw them start doubling down on the post. We saw them start just forgetting about Memphis' shooters because we know Memphis struggles to shoot the basketball. Pretty soon the Warriors, oh, wow, how'd we ever doubt them? They look like they're just rolling right along. Cavaliers beat the Bulls in six, and the Bulls looked terrible in that sixth game. I'm going to talk a little bit about Chicago and what that means for them. And then the Atlanta Hawks beat the Wizards in seven games, despite the fact that I think Paul Pierce hit like five game winners on his own. He was yelling game, he was yelling series, he was yelling it's all over, he was yelling everything, and then the Hawks would come back down and hit another shot and win it anyways. Let's talk a little bit, though, about the losers. Because the Los Angeles Clippers is the team, you know, that stood out the most to me. And I mean, they're the Clippers. We are who we thought they were. It is the Clippers. Now there's talk, and I'm sure if you're in the California area or if you're keeping an eye on NBA news at all, there is talk of breaking the Clippers up. Well, maybe this group shouldn't be together. DeAndre Jordan is already talking to some other teams. Maybe Chris Paul wants to go somewhere else. Where's Blake Griffin going to go? Would you break him up? Should we break him up and trade him and try to get something for him? Maybe we could make a big trade and kind of shake things up. And I understand that talk. And again, a lot of those moves sound really, really good when you're playing, you know, on your Xbox, but they don't really work in real life. And the thing is, it's very, very rare that you trade a star and you get a star player. Like, it's pretty rare that we just say, hey, we want to trade Blake Griffin for Kevin Durant. Okay, yeah, let's just swap. That'd be neat. That doesn't really happen. What usually happens is you take someone like Blake Griffin, and you say, hey, we want to trade you to Denver. Okay, well, we'll give you, I don't know, like, we'll give you, like, Kenneth Faried and, like, a first-round draft pick. Well, is that what you want? Because those draft picks are kind of weird property. Yeah, I have a pick, but it's not really helping me on the floor. So I know that everyone's going to talk about the Clippers need to shake up their roster. They need to move everything around. They need to get rid of this guy. And can these guys play together? And I don't know. You know what you need? What you genuinely need? You need a bench. Because that is what killed the Clippers in this entire series. They had no bench. And as good as Jamal Crawford had been, if you listened last week, you heard we gave Jamal Crawford our Sixth Man of the Year award. He was phenomenal off the bench all year until this series with the Rockets. And, you know, the thing that stood out to me the most was, don't forget, the Clippers had gone to seven games with the Spurs. They had gone, to seven games with the Rockets. This was a group of starters that had a lot of miles on them this year. Because they had to play two of those game sevens. And I don't care what they say about game sevens. Game sevens count for like three games in like NBA years. Like, you know, 7 years in dog years. game sevens count for a ton of games in those games. It's the stress. It's the pressure. It's all those things. And this team looked like they were just worn down. Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, phenomenal players. Phenomenal players. Did they cry too much and gripe too much? Of course. But they were worn down. And you could see, even when Jamal Crawford came in, he wasn't giving him much of a lift. Didn't shoot the ball well at all. And then you had the other players coming. Austin Rivers can't quite dribble. Austin Rivers not very good on defense. Saw him trying to defend James Harden. Ugh, that was rough to watch. In Game 7, did you see Austin Rivers trying to defend James Harden? I actually felt bad for Austin Rivers. Put up an article yesterday about Austin Rivers. If you haven't checked out the website, you should check out the website. There's an article up there about Austin Rivers. And I didn't realize after the game, there were some rough things that went on after the game. You should check that out over at dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Got an interesting article about that. Clippers need a bench. You don't have to break up that whole team. You don't have to, you know, tear the whole thing down and start over again. Believe me, as a Nuggets fan, I wish we were making it to Game 7s. But you do need a bench. You need to get some more people in place there. Want to keep an eye on DeAndre Jordan. He is a free agent and could move around a little bit. And I'm hearing he's already talking to some other teams. Other teams that lost, Memphis Grizzlies. Mark Gasol is going to be a free agent. And the Grizzlies have no shooters. I told you, when Golden State kind of started to figure out, oh, hey, they can't shoot it. We'll just sag down on their bigs. They don't have anybody that can stretch us out. They don't have any shooters. The key is going to be for Memphis. Can they keep Gasol? And it sounds like they will. It seems like he's pretty happy there and that he would want to stay there. But you have got to get some shooters. And I don't know who you're going to get. I don't know who's out there. I don't know if that you can't really draft shooters and expect them to be that good that early. But they need shooters. If they would have had shooters against Golden State, I think they could have given Golden State all they wanted. As it was, it just seemed like Golden State finally realized, hey, we can just basically sag off and play zone. We can just sag into the paint and limit what you're going to get. We can double down on every single one of your offensive players and make it really, really difficult for them. And that's exactly what they did. Grizzlies need some shooters. Chicago Bulls look to me like roster-wise going into the playoffs, just roster, just on paper. They looked like they had the most talent in the Eastern Conference. And then it looked like in that last game, in Game 6, it looked like they quit. It sounds like there's kind of a beef between Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose. They don't want to share the ball very much, and they didn't seem to get along. And it kind of feels like maybe Rose isn't very happy that this is Jimmy Butler's team. I don't know what's going on there. But that looked ugly. And head coach Tom Thibodeau, it's sounding like he could be gone. He may be out of there. Now, we know that Chicago has a history of getting rid of pretty good coaches. Coaches that have even had some success. Doug Collins, Phil Jackson. When Chicago gets it into their head that they are done with the coach, they are done with the coach. Let me just say this for Coach Tom Thibodeau. And I know it seems like he rubs his players a little bit wrong way. It seems like he works his players really hard. It seems like they break down physically. I'll say this. I'll take him here in Denver because I saw the spoiled group that we have running around here in Denver not listening to their coach. And then when the coach got fired, all of a sudden, oh yeah, we'll decide to play a little harder. I'll take Tom Thibodeau here in Denver in a hot minute. You can't bring him here soon enough to suit me. I know he won't come here, but that would be just fine. It sounds to me like Chicago is taking a good hard look at Iowa State coach Fred Hoiberg. And you want to talk about a difference in style. Going from Tom Thibodeau, lockdown defense, we're going to just bang you and be physical on defense, and then offensively we're just going to maybe grind out some points and hopefully score some points with our defense and some transition points, that kind of thing, to Fred Hoiberg, who is going to be, I don't want to say Golden State-ish, but it's very much like that. Spacing the floor, running the floor, finding open shooters, moving the ball at a fast pace. Very, very different styles. Here's my concern with Chicago. Chicago couldn't score against the Cavaliers' defense. That is not a great defensive team. That is not a great defensive team when they have all their people there, when Love is playing, when Irving is at his healthy, when LeBron is not playing on one leg. They looked really, really bad to me, and Chicago looked worse. I don't know. Washington Wizards just need to be patient. You know, the Wizards, I know that they were kind of excited this year, felt like, hey, we've actually got a little bit of a chance to make some noise. And with some of the health of the other teams, we're facing an Atlanta team that's very beat up. We have a chance to face maybe a Chicago or a Cleveland team that's very beat up. We have a chance to actually get there. But they have a good young core of players. You've got John Wall, you've got Bradley Beal, you've got Otto Porter. I realize that Paul Pierce may retire and Nene is probably on the backside of his career. Gortat, it doesn't have a ton of miles on him yet. That's a good young group that they have together. You might need to add another piece or two, and replacing a guy if he were to retire, and he may, especially after the playoff run that he had. Paul Pierce, you can't just go plug a new guy in and him be the same as Paul Pierce. But that's a nice squad that they have intact. They just kind of need maybe one or two more pieces that would help them. And really, a good inside presence. I didn't think Nene gave them very much in the paint at all. So those are the four losers. Those are the teams that just went home. Let's look at these two series now. Houston Rockets against the Golden State Warriors. You know, the Rockets just got hot at the right time. But let's be honest, it is not always pretty basketball, is it? I mean, so much of what the Rockets do, and when they're out in transition and they're running and you're finding the Corey Brewers and you're finding the Jason Terrys, and obviously the things that James Harden can do when he's sharing the basketball and he's driving and kicking and he's driving and finishing at the rim, some really, really good stuff. But there are times that Houston offense just turns ugly. I mean, it is four guys standing and watching James Harden as he tries to pull back and you know, draw fouls and draw fouls and draw fouls. Sometimes it gets really, really ugly to watch. Now that they've gotten by the Clippers, and I don't think anyone expected the Rockets to get this far, there is that aspect that Houston has to be feeling like they have nothing to lose right now. We're playing with house money. We weren't expected to get this far. No one expected Houston to get this far. We weren't entirely sure if Houston was going to get out of the first series, let alone getting this far. Houston is just that team that I think they're kind of playing with nothing to lose right now because no one expected them to get this. And with that series with the Clippers being as over as it was, they can do whatever they want now. Here's the problem for Houston, and I like the way they play. I've told you that in the past. I like the group that they have together. I like the way they play. Playing against Golden State is so smart. You saw that in that game last night. The Warriors were able to get that victory last night. And I was watching that game, and I really was thinking, Houston, if you're going to get one, tonight's the night. Because Golden State allowed like 50 first half points. I mean, it was a ton. They just weren't real focused on defense. They had some foul trouble. They just really were struggling. And I was like, Houston, tonight's your night. You have got to find a way to get a win tonight because I don't know if you're going to get this many more opportunities. And then, you know, Golden State went on that run. Houston was up by 14, and Golden State just went on that run, and that was it. I mean, the interesting thing to me about Golden State is they don't make many mistakes, and they're never out of a game. And just like last night, they were down by 14 just before the end of the half, and they go on like a 21-4 run. And all of a sudden, not only is Houston, you know, not up by a bunch going into halftime, they're actually trailing at halftime. The thing about Golden State, I don't know if they're playing that great offense. I thought last night was one of the first time I saw their offense start to kind of get some good motion, get some good ball movement, get some good player movement, get a few ball reversals. But in that Memphis series, I didn't think they played very good offense at all. Every once in a while, they would have a good night. Every once in a while, they would have a player that had, you know, hey, Steph Curry just got hot. Or you had, you know, Klay Thompson just get hot. But it wasn't like you were just looking at them and going, yeah, they're just playing great, great offensive basketball. They're actually not. They're kind of playing pretty average offensive basketball. The key with Golden State is they're starting to learn how to play pretty good defense. And if, you know, their defense isn't this shutdown defense, but it's very opportunistic defense where they get steals, they get themselves in the passing lanes, they find ways just to get these turnovers and stuff where they go down and they turn it into instant offense. And then we know at the offensive end, if they get going, good luck. I mean, Steph Curry last night goes for 34 and only took 22 shots to get there. I mean, the way that they can score in bunches and in just these huge runs where you can hold them and hold them and hold them, but you kind of know this big run is coming. And when it comes, it's really, really going to hurt. I like the Warriors in the series. I just think of all the teams left, of all four of the teams left, Golden State makes the fewest mistakes. They'll make a mistake here or there. They'll have a blown coverage here or there. They'll have a blown assignment or they'll take a bad shot, but they don't make as many as some of the other teams do. Over on the other side, Hawks and Cavaliers. And this series shouldn't be close. Let's be real honest. This series shouldn't even be close. Cleveland Cavaliers just took out the Bulls. They did it pretty easily. The Hawks struggled to even get past the Wizards. They struggled a little bit in their first round matchup. I mean, this shouldn't even be a series. But I'm going to tell you why it might be. Because unlike Chicago, Atlanta's spacing and ball movement could give that Cleveland team a little bit of problem. Remember, Cleveland is not a great defensive team. They can't just back up and say, hey, we're just going to shut you down. They're getting better, and they're certainly better than they were earlier in the year, and they're probably better than they were with Kevin Love. But this isn't a great defensive team. Now, I don't know if the Hawks have the people. They've been banged up physically. I don't know if they have the people. But if they can move the ball like they did earlier this season, and they can shoot it just a little bit, George Teague has been very good down the stretch. Al Horford gives you some presence inside. This could be closer than what we might think it is. Keep this in mind, and I don't want to get too detailed with you, but when you're just watching one of these games, Look for two things on offense. Is the ball moving around the floor? And I don't just mean me passing over the wing and right back. That's not movement. I mean the ball is seeing both sides of the floor. It's moving all over. And are players moving? Or are players just standing? When I watch Houston's offense, there are a number of times, it's not every time, but there are a number of times they are standing and they are watching James Harden. That's easy for a defense to defend. When you watch the Atlanta Hawks, watch their team movement because everybody's moving, everyone's cutting, and the ball is, if the ball is moving all over the floor, that makes it so difficult to defend. By three or four passes, the defense is literally trailing on every pass. I want to see that in this series, if that spacing and that ball movement can give the Cavaliers at least a little bit of a problem. Do you realize that for the first time since 1998, the NBA Finals will not have either Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, or Dwayne Wade. This year, 2015, for the first time since 1998. That's a pretty incredible run by those three players. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. I told you earlier, Daily Dose Top 5 today is a historic Daily Dose Top 5. You know, the Daily Dose Top 5, it has a mind of its own. And you never know where it's going to go. And this week is certainly no exception. Because it just kind of takes over. You kind of start getting some things in mind, and here's a direction it could go. Maybe here's something that happened in the news. The Top 5 just kind of goes and does its own thing. I received an email this week from one of my favorite listeners, Mike in SoCal. And he, if you don't know Mike, back in the radio days when the Daily Dose was on the radio, Mike would call in every once in a while, always had some insightful thoughts, always had some good questions. And what he wrote to me this week was, he said, you know, there are so many bad big men at the free throw line. And we're having all this hack-a-shack stuff, and they're talking about changing rules, and do we need to eliminate these guys shooting free throws? Because if they can't make them, we better make it easier for them, which drives me crazy. But when you look at some of the big men that are in the playoffs right now, and you look at some of the big men in history, some bad free throw shooters, really bad free throw shooters. And so he said, have there ever been big men that could legitimately shoot free throws? I mean, who are some of the big men that could really shoot free throws? Excellent question. Because, you know, I started looking at some of the stats. I started looking at some of the free throw shooters and some of the big men throughout history of the game. And like this year, DeAndre Jordan, they go to the hack of DeAndre. DeAndre Jordan is shooting 42%. So I can disrupt your offense. I can disrupt your team. I can disrupt everything. And I know 42%, I know for a fact you're only hitting one, and you might not even hit the second one. Dwight Howard is shooting 57%. And you go back, you know, even more in history, you look at someone like Shaquille O'Neal, who, I can hit it when I have to, 52% for his career, Shaquille O'Neal at the line. Ben Wallace, 41%. Ben Wallace was atrocious at the line. So good defensively, but so, so bad at the free throw line. Even, you know, the greats like Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain, and it's funny because Wilt Chamberlain shot about 51% at the line, but what he would do, and this is pretty, I guess well known. Wilt Chamberlain would tell his opponent, if you foul me, I'm fighting you in the parking lot afterward. Do not foul me. Do not touch me. I will fight you afterward. And so there were a lot of guys that were just afraid to foul Wilt. But I started looking and started saying, you know, who are some of the great big men that could shoot free throws? And the list that I have in the top five might surprise you. Might not be guys that you would think of that could shoot free throws. Let me give you a couple of stats. There was a center that was pretty good. One of the greatest centers of all time, Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He shot about 72% at the line. Patrick Ewing shot about 74% at the line. Kevin Garnett, 7-footer, shot 79%. Bob Lanier, big man back in the day, shot 77%. Akeem Olajuwon was very, very good at the line. He shot about 71%. And Robert Parrish, the Chief with the Boston Celtics, shot about 72%. So who are the best free throw shooting big men? That is our top five this week. Best free throw shooting big men. Number five on our list this week. He was a big guy. He was a big guy. And we remember him being such a force inside, especially defensively. Offensively, he could do some things. It wasn't that he was challenged offensively. He could score. He could do some different things. But defensively, we remember him anchoring these defenses. And he played in the league for 14 seasons, shot blocker. The great thing about having a player like this behind you is, you know, I can gamble, I can press, because even if my man beats me and gets to the basket, he's back there to block that shot. He's back there to knock some things down. You might not remember that 7'6" Yao Ming shot 83% at the free throw line for his career. Yao Ming was a pretty good free throw shooter. Kind of forget that. He was such a big dude. 7'6", are you kidding me? The one guy that, you know, actually was like the same size and looked, you know, around the same size as Shaquille O'Neal. Pretty amazing. Yao Ming, 83%. Number four on our list. Another guy that you don't really think of him being such a great shooter, but because you think of other things about him. He was very, very physical player, a little bit of a cheap shot player. You loved him if he was on your team, but if he was on the other team, you hated his guts. But this is a guy that was not afraid to do dirty work. He would take the charge. He would be physical. He would bang on your big man. He could rebound. He could shoot. He could score. You remember him as a member of the Bad Boys, but did you remember that Bill Laimbeer shot 84% at the free throw line for his career? Bill Laimbeer was another guy. You didn't want to put him at the line. Which, you know, the interesting thing about these guys is these are the guys you want to have the ball down the stretch. Instead of always having to be my point guard, I can throw it inside to my big man. You want to foul him? Go ahead. We've kind of lost that these days, haven't we? Number three on our list, a guy that you might not remember. Didn't you just know that a Duke guy would be on here? You had to have a Duke Blue Devil on this list, didn't you? This guy played 14 seasons with the New Jersey Nets. You might remember a little bit more with the Philadelphia 76ers. He was okay. He was solid. Had 10,000 career points. You usually remembered him as the big white stiff in the middle. But 6'11", Mike Jaminski, averaged 84% for his career at the free throw line. Big Mike Jaminski, pretty good free throw shooter. Number two on our list. Number two on our list coming out of college, kind of an unknown guy. He came out, he went to Illinois Wesleyan. He was drafted in 77 by the Seattle Supersonics. Actually won a championship in 79 with Seattle. He was traded over to Milwaukee, spent the last few years of his career as a Milwaukee Buck, which may be where you remember him. And you might look at him and think, here's another big man stiff. I will tell you this. Jack Sikma had a patented move. You might not realize this. But there is a move that basketball coaches teach called the Sigma move. And Sigma perfected this. And what this move is, if a big man catches the ball down on the block and he has his back to the basket, you reverse pivot to where you step away from the defender and you pull up and you shoot that quick shot. Quick reverse pivot and up and shoot. And Jack Sigma actually was the guy. I'm not saying he invented it, but he was the guy that was where he made his living a lot of times. If you see those old clips of Jack Sigma, the Sigma move, the reverse pivot and straight up into a shot. Jack Sigma shot 85% at the line. Another very, very good big man at the free throw line. Number one on our list. Number one on our list, big man. And I'll tell you this, because I don't think I mentioned this before. The kind of caveat for me on this list was you had to be at least 6'10". All of our guys, I think, were 6'11 or bigger. You had to be a guy that could play inside. You could do whatever, but you had to be a free throw shooter that shot at least 1,200 professional free throws. So I'm sure there's somebody out there that shot like 6 free throws. We're not putting you on the list. You had to be pretty legit. Number one on our list, top 5 best free throw shooting big men, and it is a lost art. It is a lost art. I heard that Chris Paul was actually kind of saying, and there were mumbles through the Clippers organization, that, you know, DeAndre Jordan doesn't work on his free throws. He doesn't work on them. And there's a number of people that have asked me, because, you know, I said last week, give me a day session with some of these guys that struggle at the line. I promise you I can help them a little bit. I've had to teach this to little kids. It's not that hard. So much of this, I think, comes down to two things when you're talking about free throws. I think it is either their technique, or they have some kind of psychological block when they're shooting free throws. This guy had none of those things. Number one on our list, best free throw shooting big man. He's one of the best ever. He absolutely revolutionized the power forward position because of his shooting ability. Because he could go inside, he could hurt you down on the block, he could hurt you down the paint. He could go outside, he could hurt you outside as well. 13-time All-Star. Was won the championship in 2011, was named the championship most valuable player, was also named the MVP of the NBA in 2007, and shot 88% from the free throw line as a 7-footer. Dirk Nowitzki is our number one best free throw shooting big man. Hey, great list that Mike sent to us. I want to thank you for sending that out to us, Mike. Hey, if you have an idea, you got an idea for a top five, you got an idea of a subject that you'd like us to talk about, send it to me. Send it to me at dailydosesports@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Next week, we will talk some NBA. We might talk a little NHL. NFL is always year round. Major League Baseball is starting to heat up a little bit. And of course, you know, you might not remember, we've got a long weekend this weekend. So you've got the Indy 500, you've got NASCAR at Charlotte. We might actually talk about some racing. It's not rubbing, it's racing. We might talk about some racing this week. You never know. And as usual, we will have our top five. Hey, if you get a chance, please, please, please share the podcast. Go on, rate it, review it. Give us a 5-star rating. We do appreciate that. I would encourage you all to enjoy the long weekend. And for Memorial Day, make sure you thank a veteran. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this show without you. Thank you for so much that you do. I thank you all for listening. Have a great long weekend. Enjoy the time. I will see you all next week.